Yesterday, Republican Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky filibustered the Senate floor for nearly 13 hours in protest of the administration's use of drones.
This is not about partisanship. I have allowed the president to pick his political appointees, but I will not sit quietly and let him shred the Constitution. I cannot sit at my desk quietly and let the president say that he will kill Americans on American soil who are not actively attacking a country.
Paul was joined by several other senators, including Florida Senator Marco Rubio and Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell. His action successfully delayed the confirmation vote on CIA Director nominee John Brennan. While used infrequently, the filibuster is one of the most fascinating political techniques in Congress. What's your favorite filibuster? Give us a call at 800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org. And you can join the conversation at our website. Go to npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation. And joining us now in Studio 3A to talk about filibustering is our favorite filibusterer, NPR's public junkie, political junkie, Ken Rudin. See, I never should have tried to say filibusterer.
Lynn, you've talked long enough. That's why they call this Talk of the Nation, by the way.
Now, listen, Paul was speaking on a very, we want to talk about filibustering, but he was speaking on a very serious topic on the use of drones. Is there any chance that what he did would be useful in any way on that topic, on that issue?
Well, the answer is yes, but let me explain exactly what he tried to do. During the confirmation hearings of John Brennan to be the head of the CIA, he specifically asked John Brennan and he asked the White House whether they would ever consider launching a drone on American soil against an American citizen who may have been accused of whatever transgression, blah, blah, blah. And he did not get a direct answer, certainly didn't get a direct answer from Eric Holder, the attorney general. So Rand Paul, who probably would have done this, and he said he would have done this if this were a Republican president, because after all, he did vote for Chuck Hagel. He did vote for John Kerry, President Obama's cabinet nominee. So he said it's not about partisanship. It's about principle. And Rand Paul is a kind of principled guy. So he said, I'm going to talk until I get an answer. Now, as it turned out, he did speak for almost 13 hours. He did get an answer. He got a letter today from Eric Holder, the attorney general. He said the answer is no, we will not do that. So ultimately, he got what he wanted. I mean, he won't stop John Brennan. That nomination is likely to pass certainly by Saturday, the latest. But he did get an answer from the administration saying it will not happen, drone attacks on U.S. soil. So people like, you know, Neil Conan have nothing to worry about, things like that.
And he got a lot of attention for himself, I have to say.
He did, and a lot of people are talking about how this plays into 2016, and that may be true, may not be true. But, of course, you should also remember that you mentioned some senators he was joined by. He was also joined by Ron Wyden, a Democratic senator from Oregon, who also is opposed to the administration's drone policy in Pakistan, in Yemen, in Somalia. But again, it was really about what Rand Paul feels is a potential violation of the Constitution, and that's why he wanted to hold up the Senate. He would have loved to have broken a record, but of course, duty called, and he left about after 13 hours.
Well, sometimes people have to talk about a lot of different things in order to fill up those hours when they're filibustering. And Rand Paul got some help yesterday from Florida Senator Marco Rubio. Let's listen to what Rubio had to say.
Takes me back to another modern-day poet by the name of Jay-Z. In one of his songs he wrote, "It's funny what 7 days can change. It was all good just a week ago." Well, I don't know if it was all good a week ago, but I can tell you that things have really changed.
Well, you know, sometimes you do have to fill up time, as you said. He read from The Godfather. Ted Cruz, the new senator from Texas, read from Shakespeare. In the 1930s, when there was a filibuster, Huey Long of Louisiana was reading a shrimp and crab leg recipes. Some people read the phone book. Years ago, when Harry Reid tried to hold up some of President Bush's judicial nominations, he read from his own book, which I'm sure kept everybody awake. But anyway, so sometimes you do have to fill the space, fill the time, and you'll do whatever you can.
Well, let's talk about the history of the filibuster. Where did this come from? Where did this idea come from?
Well, the rules of the Senate allowed filibusters, meaning you could talk forever with no way of stopping it. In 1919, they passed something called, I think, Rule 22, which allowed the Senate to come up with three-quarters of the vote, or 67 That would be 67 votes. No, that would be two-thirds. Two-thirds. No, 67, I'm sorry. It would be 67 senators to stop. It would be called cloture. That would stop the filibuster. That changed after 1975 when they said it has to be 60 votes. So now 60 votes can stop a filibuster. The problem with this is that we don't even have the Rand Paul standing up in the Senate or even the Jimmy Stewarts standing up, as we heard in Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, that great 1939 movie. What we have now is the threat of a filibuster. So a lot of times, if a nominee comes up, if Bush or Obama or somebody would offer a nomination, the threat of a filibuster alone could end that nomination.
Well, of course, you were just talking about Jimmy Stewart, and of course, we have some tape from that very famous movie. So let's hear a little bit of Jimmy Stewart first as he's beginning his filibuster in the movie Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
Well, I guess the gentlemen are in a pretty tall hurry to get me out of here. The way the evidence is piled up against me, I can't say I blame them much. And I'm quite willing to go, sir, when they voted that way. But before that happens, I've got a few things I want to say to this body. I tried to say them once before, and I got stopped colder than a mackerel. Well, I'd like to get them said this time, sir. And as a matter of fact, I'm not going to leave this body until I do get them said.
Colder than a mackerel, I like that very much. Now, Mr. Smith filibusters for 23 hours before he collapses very dramatically to the ground.
You all think I'm licked. Well, I'm not licked. And I'm going to stay right here and fight for this lost cause. Even if this room gets filled with lies like these. And the tailors and all their armies come marching into this place. Somebody will listen to me.
You know, it's remarkable. The movie was only 2 hours. I don't know how he spoke for 23 hours. But you know, see, that was the romanticized view of the filibuster, that he stood up for what he was right. He stood up to corrupt elements in the Senate, in his own party, and he, you know, tried to clear his name. So that was very romantic. But less romantic is some civil rights filibusters against civil rights legislation. The longest in history was in 1957 when Strom Thurmond, then a Democratic senator from South Carolina, took the floor for 24 hours and 18 minutes to filibuster the 1957 Civil Rights Act. So, you know, you could talk about how romantic Jimmy Stewart was, but there's also people who would try to stop progress in this country, like Strom Thurmond. Robert Byrd also filibustered the 1964 Civil Rights Bill. That is less so romantic.
Is the filibuster uniquely American? Is there any?
No, they have. I know Canada, which I've read recently, considers itself a separate country. And I read that people in Canada have done the same thing, reading of the phone book to hold up legislation or hold up nominations. Same thing in Canada.
All right. We're going to take a call. We're going to go to Kathleen. She's in Wilmington, North Carolina. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
I was wondering, what did Strom Thurmond read? Was it the Congressional Record?
I think Strom Thurmond did read from the phone book, and he did it all by himself. Matter of fact, the key to what Strom Thurmond did was he went to a steam room prior to the preparation for this, so, you know, he wouldn't have to go to the make bathroom breaks. He was very, very careful about that. Rand Paul did not prepare like that. Matter of fact, Rand Paul, it seems like he didn't prepare at all, and he said, had I known I was going to do this, I probably would have taken some steps to see if I could equal Strom Thurmond's thing. But Strom Thurmond read from the phone book. He read from just, you know, basic things. But look, you know, there's nothing wrong. It's funny to talk about the romanticism of a filibuster. And again, watching Jimmy Stewart collapse and everybody gasping. Strom Thurmond, you know, of course, was talking about stopping basic civil rights. And when you think of 1957, that was one of the weakest civil rights bills that we could have come up with. But again, it was a first, and Thurmond did everything he can to stop it.
And apparently he got ready with cough drops and malted milk balls.
Right, exactly right.
Strange combination.
Well, yes, well, it was a strange time back then. And we don't have tape of that. We didn't start taping the procedures in the Senate until the 1980s. So, of course, we don't have tape of Strom Thurmond there.
Kathleen, do you remember that by any chance, or is that just something that...
Well, I'm a civics teacher in North Carolina, and I teach about the filibuster. And my students are always very surprised that this is something that goes on in the Senate. They're not aware of it, so...
And once you tell them about it, I think I've always been kind of fascinated by it since I learned about it first when I was very young in school. Do you find that kids are sort of fascinated by this?
They are fascinated by it. That's part of how our system works. And, you know, I teach civics, so we talk about how bills can be stopped in the House and the Senate. And it's surprising to them. So I find it fascinating, though.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call, Kathleen.
But of course, the Strom Thurmonds, the Rand Pauls, the people who stood up for hours speaking against a bill or a nomination, that's the aberration. That doesn't happen anymore. Basically, it's the threat of a filibuster that gets everybody scared. So a lot of times there will be a judicial nomination. President Bush had it. President Clinton had it. President Obama had it. And when the other party says, we're threatening to have a filibuster, they say, look, it's not going to be worth the effort. We'll withdraw the nomination.
Yeah. Let's take a call from Chris in Nashville. Hi, Chris.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm well. My favorite filibuster is the Stackhouse filibuster from the fictional West Wing show. And I'm with you. I watched that show in high school, and that is the romantic version of the filibuster in my mind.
Can you remind us of that? I don't remember it. So,
well, I don't even know what the plot was, really, but I know that he was reading the cookbook on the Senate floor. That's how I first heard about the filibuster. And I know that's how it should be these days. You know, like Ken said, we deal more with a threat than the romantic version of people standing up and reading. So, even though I didn't agree with Rand Paul, I really respected that he was doing it the old school way.
All right. Thanks so much for your call, Chris. We're talking with NPR's political junkie Ken Rudin about filibusters, and you are listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. All right, let's go to Colin, who's calling from Sacramento, California. Hi, Colin.
Hi, yes. Thank you for taking my call.
Go ahead.
So I was actually trying to make an argument. I've been getting into it with some friends on Facebook. The commentary was that I'm actually quite surprised how germane the filibuster was to the issue at hand. I know that you made a couple of chippy remarks to folks like Senator Rubio making commentary on Jay-Z, but it was quite interesting that the duration of the debate, it wasn't an ideological opposition to a particular nominee, or just an ideological opposition such as Strom Thurmond to the Civil Rights Act of 57, is actually quite germane to the discussion at hand. And so I was wondering if there's instances like that in the past where there have been extended filibusters that have talked almost exclusively about the merits of a particular piece of legislation or a particular candidate as opposed to general intransigence.
Okay, Colin, thanks. That's a good question.
Well, that's a good question. I mean, there have been filibusters in the past where the speakers focus on the issue at hand. One of the longest filibusters in history came in 1986 when Alphonse D'Amato, then a Republican senator from New York, spoke 23 hours and 30 minutes on the 1986 military spending bill. And it was not a lot of outside stuff, non-germane stuff. It was really focused on the bill. But he's absolutely right. Colin's absolutely right. Rand Paul did focus on this issue. It's very important to him. It's the kind of Tea Party / libertarian view of the Constitution that is not ideological, that is not partisan. And as he said, and as I said earlier, that he would have had, if this were George Bush in the White House, he would have taken on Bush as well.
Is there a filibuster in particular from history that you can think of, Ken, that did work really well at dealing with the issue at hand?
Well, you could make the case that the only time a Supreme Court nomination was ever filibustered in history came in 1968. Lyndon Johnson, in June of 68, was already a lame duck president, already announced he wasn't going to run for another term. Earl Warren, the Chief Justice of the United States, announced that he would retire. And Lyndon Johnson nominated Abe Fortas, a member of the Supreme Court and an LBJ longtime crony, as Chief Justice. And a coalition of the Republican Party and Southern Democrats filibustered it, one, because Fortas had some ethics questions, two, he was so close with LBJ that he would not be a truly independent, and by October, they got what they wanted. Johnson withdrew the nomination. That's one example of it really, really working. But other examples, even just a threat of a nomination, there were a lot of Bush nominees, Clinton nominees that the president's just said, I'm withdrawing them because we have no chance of getting past the 60-vote margin.
Do you know the first time that a filibuster was ever used?
I don't. And stop asking me questions I don't know.
I'm always trying to.
No, I know there was one. Actually, there was a John C. Calhoun one in the 1800s. And, of course, back then, you just could talk forever. There was no opportunity for cloture, no way to stop it, but I don't even remember exactly what.
Well, you know, all good filibusters really must come to an end, and even Senator Rand Paul's had to come to an end in the early hours of this morning. Let's see how he closed out his filibuster.
And I would go for another 12 hours to try to break Strom Thurmond's record, but I've discovered that there are some limits to filibustering, and I'm going to have to go take care of one of those in a few minutes here.
That does make you wonder about some of those other filibusters that lasted longer, I have to say.
No, exactly right. But you know, the thing with Rand Paul, there's a big thing on Twitter, Stand with Rand. He has touched a nerve in this country because people who are tired of the threat of a filibuster, whether you support a filibuster or not, at least this is the way a filibuster should be handled in person, standing up, a senator standing up by himself.
So Americans have not lost their sort of affection, their love affair with the filibuster.
Well, certainly better than the way it had been going on the last couple of years.
Yeah. So, all right, Ken, thanks so much for joining us again.
I'm not finished talking. I have a lot more to say. Well, I'd like to read from the phone book here that this is. Thank you, Lynn.
Can you take us out?
Thanks, Lynn.
Okay, Ken Rudin is NPR's political junkie, and of course, he was with me here in Studio 3A. Tomorrow, it's Talk of the Nation Science Friday with a look at how researchers are trying to tap into the fountain of youth. Is red wine the key? And Neil Conan will be back on Monday. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington.